It's a long story. Anyway.
Oh, wait, no. I change the subject, change the topic. How did you almost burn down your house?
I had lit a candle and left the room. And when I came back, the candle was in one of those little tins, right?
Yep.
And when I came back, the whole tin was on fire.
Oh, wow.
And cool. it was too much fire for me to like blow it out. So I was like, okay, what'll I do? I went to the kitchen. I got like a cup of water and I threw it on the candle. You never do that. Ever.
That's terrible. Terrible. That's never terrible. Like literally oil and fat.
Yeah. So a fireball erupted from the candle and went up into my ceiling.
Oh my stars.
So you didn't get a towel.
Layer 2 Pixelcast episode 180. I'm your host, Tim Henderson, sitting way too close to the camera. Maybe it's time I replace this fucking thing. Really, really stretching my usage of legacy tech here, but you know what? I'm still doing better than Jen, who we're going to make things up, but not like twist the kernel of truth with somewhere else and say maybe she just, you know, burned her camera to death.
Hey.
Hi, Jen.
My camera was the one thing that survived. I just haven't unpacked it. Well, so hello.
It was in the same box as a fire blanket. Yeah, and with, you know, the supreme... This doesn't mean anything. We don't even release a video version of this, but with the supremely well-focused, well-distanced camera. Jason, you're back.
I am back. I haven't been on one of these since... Oh, actually, you know what? It's only been since Christmas. I was on Sadistic Santa, which I love every single year.
Yeah, it's only been a couple of months and maybe change.
Yep, which is pretty good. Normally, I'm not available on Monday.
And normally, so it's annual as well. Like this is rare. This is like super Jason doses.
Yep.
Anyway, maybe it's because Jason only shows up for two things. One is Sadistic Santa, which is a horror in itself, and the other one is that we are going to be, you know, diving a little bit into horror games. We've done similar stuff before. I think, yeah. And part is like this in Australia, particularly like those Resident Evil releases that always seem to happen at the beginning of the year. Like they're always Q1. Make a lot more sense, because where I'm sitting right now, like, I'm in the last gasp of winter and spring is coming, but for everybody in Australia, it's like fucking autumn is like right around the corner. Like, this is technically where Halloween should be for you.
Yep.
For you guys. So this all lines up pretty well. Jen's here probably just because she's horny for Resident Evil characters.
That's exactly why I'm here. That is the only reason why I'm here. I will be thirsting over men in horror games, and that is all I will be doing tonight.
Heaven help us if she ever actually plays a dragon game.
Yeah, true.
Anyway, let's keep this quirks with Jen rolling a little bit here.
Right.
I'm going to go from thirsting over horror men to like being a billionaire and buying some new RAM and then playing a 15-year-old game. Jen, what have you been doing?
Okay, so as Tim said, I have been playing Skyrim, which came out in 2011. To play Skyrim to the full ability of the 4,000 mods I'm running it with, I have recently gone out and for my birthday, my husband very kindly bought me a new processor. And then I bought some new RAM that cost far too much. And then I bought a new graphics card, which was also very expensive.
Oh, but
I also,
gosh.
I also paid an extra $100 because I wanted it to be white and I wanted it to have lights. So, you know, that's on me.
I would pay an extra $100 to have the lights ripped out.
I also would be in that boat.
So I have been playing Skyrim for many, many, since like the beginning of the year, and I haven't stopped.
All right, so yeah, I guess one thing I want to know is like, I remember the early Skyrim phase and like the stupid macho dragons and other dumb stuff. What is the modding scene going on now? Like what have you done to your game to justify God knows $1,000 or whatever it is you must have spent. Oh, no, you've got a graphics card. It's got to be at least $2,000.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about the money that I've spent, okay? it looks amazing. It plays more like Dark Souls, but it's Skyrim. Oof. And there's cute boys in my game now.
I thought it was exclusively horror games, or is this like an extra dark... Like there's a zombies that come out at night.
Look, I just like boys who are mean to me. In games. In real life, I'll smack them. But in games, I like boys who are mean to me.
Oh my god, this entire time you and Matt have been flirting? Is that where we're getting at?
Ew, no. In real life, I like nice men. My husband is a very nice man. in games, like, be me, like, you know, anyway.
It's where the fantasy's coming.
Someone else talk now.
So you've turned Skyrim into an otome game, is that what you're telling
yeah,
me?
Kinda, yeah, yeah.
I'm kind of into it, you know what?
it's worth the, however the hell, $3,000-$4,000 I've spent.
Oof, yeah.
Ooh, wait, okay, what graphics card was this that you required to put all these mods on?
Well, I was running a 3080 Ti.
That's and already it was, pretty high-end still.
Yeah, like, it's really high-end.
It was pretty good. Now I'm running a 5070 Ti.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, you're like a half step above me. See, I felt like I was swimming in the posh pond when I bought the RX 9070 XT. My God, graphics cards have stupid names. Like, anybody who's not in on PC gaming right now is going, what the fuck are they talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, I also upgraded my graphic card in both my gamer and my file server from a 2070, which was getting to the end of its life, to a also 5070s. I got dual 5070s, and it was crazy expensive. Graphics cards are a lot.
It was. The thing that's showing me here is, like, just how, like, I guess Skyrim is just going to live forever.
It was. Like, Skyrim is a game engine now. Like, it's people use Skyrim to build whatever the hell they want. That's the beauty of Skyrim now.
It's like Skyrim, like Roblox, but not garbage. Is that what you're trying to?
Yeah. Skyrim is Roblox.
See, I played Skyrim when it launched, and I never touched it after that. I kind of bounced off it. I'm like, I love sandbox games, and Skyrim just was not doing it for me. It feels kind of empty to me, but I know that people love that game, and
clearly,
the moddability is a big one.
Yeah, so, like, you've said it's a bit more like a Souls-like now. Is like, and are there any other other quests or shit, or is it just like a pretty version with harder combat now?
Oh, there's like, essentially, people have made like DLC for the game. There's like a bunch of different content, but there's also, my favorite thing is called Legacy of the Dragonborn, and it basically adds a big museum, kind of like how in Animal Crossing you have the museum. And
oh wow,
yeah, so it's kind of like that, but you know, you have to collect every armor set, you have to collect all the weapons, all the stuff, and that's something I love in cozy games, and now it's in Skyrim, so I'm just playing like a little relic hunter running around collecting all my little relics.
Oh my God, do you know what I've just realized?
Yes.
Technically, Dark Souls is a cozy game in the sense that macaroni and cheese is a comfort food. Like, it is that old, it is going to be a nostalgic point for people's life where, like, playing Dark Souls is going to be, like, that happy place.
Yep.
Yep.
Especially if you've played it before, you know, wow, that is terrifying. I mean, Skyrim's been that for a long time, I guess, but...
I mean, that's horror as well. Like, there are a lot of people that are just like, oh, I've had a super stressful day, I'm just going to come home and watch some horror, which is almost the antithesis of what it's meant to be, but...
Yeah, it actually makes a certain amount of sense to me. We go back to the last time I was doing any kind of intensive course. Way back when I was living in London, I bought two CDs. I was doing my Celta, and I was doing a way too compressed amount of time. One was Jose Gonzalez, if you remember that cover of Heartbeats that I think was playing for like his Bravia ads, is like really...
Yes, with all the balls.
Yeah. See, Jen knows exactly what... That, like, you remember that if you see it. Like, it was actually, they're actually really nice. And it was like a super chill, like pretty nice acoustic guitar, like very cafe-esque. And the other one was a fucking Nightwish CD.
Oh, which great, is just great band.
Like, yeah, it's like the operatic era Nightwish as well. Yep. Like, just full-on symphonic metal.
Mm.
And the metal one was what I was listening to the entire time, because like it just kind of focused the stress somewhere. It's like it actually kind of needs, like, I don't know. It's like if you're stressed, like watching comedies is not like what's going to help. Like if you feel like you want to punch something, then you need some violence that isn't going to put a natural hole in your wall, I guess is what I'm going to say.
No, I get that. Like when I'm mad at work, I will sit at my desk and I will blast Slipknot into my ears until they bleed.
All right, speaking as a person who has chronic tinnitus, maybe just turn the volume down a little
bit. Yeah, I also am pretty deaf. Take care of your ears.
Mine was certainly stress triggered during COVID, but learned out that I'm actually extra sensitive to bass, which also explains why I was so pissed off during that whole like Beats phase and headphones for like half a decade.
Mm, yeah.
Anyway, speaking of things that are disgusting, Jason.
I hope you're referring to the games I'm playing and not actually me, but, you know.
I'm going from headphones that I don't like, which is maybe a bit much of a deep to. Yes, I'm talking about your freaking cat army, dude.
Yeah. So I've been playing Mugenics. It's horrific. It's very good. It is very awful. It is the duality of man. I am breeding cats in the most horrific way. I am currently doing what is referred to as a have sex with your uncle strategy, where all of my cats breed with their uncle. So inbreeding is kept to a
maximum.
Not gone, but not truly awful. That game is visceral in a very strange way, and I am super duper into it. It is it's very, very fun. It is very terrible. I adore it.
Like, I mean, all the cats are having sex with the uncle, and you said like that's not truly awful. That is already like beyond Epstein Island level shit like happening.
Yeah, it's pretty bad, dude.
It's not great, but I had to adapt the strategy from sleeping with your father, so that was too inbred.
So at least one step sibling removed and suddenly it's all right.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's a pun on eugenics. Like, yeah, what did you think I was going to do here?
Hang on, I need to go and get my cats and take them far, far away from this.
Right, can you explain the actual gameplay of this, Jason? Because
so
I believe it's roguelite-ish. Like, the reason
it is, like, it is very roguelike. So what you do is you breed up four cats or take four off the street that are also horrific. And you send them out on journeys. You give them collars that give them a class, and you send them out to fight off horrific creatures. At the moment, I am fighting my way through a nuclear bunker and then into the core of a volcano. And when they come home, I kind of
have sex parties with the family.
And when they're done and dusted and they're all dry and unable to breathe anymore.
So they just go until they're chafing. Is that what you're getting at?
Pretty much. And then I send them into the wood chipper. by which I mean I donate them to a person that is experimenting on them. and if they breed a child that is not worthwhile of my new army, then that one will also be sent off as a kitten to a loving home, quote unquote.
For a supposedly excellent game, and the consensus is that it is very, very good.
It's extremely good. Yeah, like, I love Edmund McGillan. I think his art is really fascinating. I think his games are really, really good. Binding of Isaac was great. Also a horrific game. But I'm just not that good at that type of twin-stick shooter. So this is turn-based, and I am much smarter at turn-based games. So, yeah, this one really works for me. It's long. It's really long.
Remind us again how many hours you put in so far.
So I've got 150, and I'm near the end, but they also announced that they're going to be doing more DLC. So it is not the end of my cat army just yet. But I tend to only play one of two type of games, and there's like nothing in the middle. I play games that are extremely short or extremely long. Like, generally, yeah, I play like anything that's like sub 5 hours comes across my desk quite often, and anything that's over 100 hours also comes across my desk pretty frequently.
To put this in perspective, Jason, I've just gone into my Steam profile.
Mm-hmm.
My most played game is Stardew Valley at 87.2 hours.
Oh
my god.
That's my most played game is technically 2,500 hours, but my second most played game is Satisfactory with almost 700 hours. And I haven't finished it yet.
Granted, this is Steam. There are probably a couple of console games that I may have put more into than that, but
yeah.
150 is a lot, dude, especially for like this game's been out, what? It came out this year.
It did. I got the code, I want to say 3 weeks ago. And this is not the only thing I've been playing, but it is the only one I can talk about.
You should probably start advertising some sort of pills that mean you don't need to sleep or something, dude. Like, there's money on the table here.
Yeah, look, honestly, I don't sleep a lot, and I have a very lovely wife that allows me to spend time doing this stuff under the proviso that she also gets to play games, so it works out.
It seems like a very mutually beneficial.
Yeah, it's a good system. It's a good system. Wait,
are you actually just tired? I'm getting away from games here, but are you actually tired all the time? Or are you part of that very small percentage of the population who actually do only need 3 hours sleep or something?
I can get away with 3. Yeah, I'm not tired all the time. I can get decently tired if I really pull some real late nighters. But yeah, generally I can get away with 3-4 hours.
Because I am anything less than 5 and I'm completely fucked, and anything less than 7 and I'm still not good.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is the superpower to play games, guys. You just...
It is? Yeah, absolutely.
You don't need sleep. I guess I mean, I'm joking, but also legit. It's a thing. I know it's a real thing. And
there's a lot of games that launch every single year. I think I've already reviewed, we're in start of March. I think I've reviewed maybe 12 games this year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've not reviewed one because despite my shiny new computer, it kept on freezing up.
Yeah,
so I have an essay in Romeo is a Dead Man of sorts on the website instead, saying, ooh, here's a stream of conscious that happened while I was playing it, but also it would just randomly hitch up for 5, 6, 7 seconds at a time, repeatedly, which...
Was that an issue with Romeo, or was it an issue with your PC?
I immediately just uploaded a demo or something higher end it was run. But I guess segue this in. I have been playing for about 8 hours according to my Steam account at this point. Hell Is Us.
Ooh.
Which is also pretty high end-ish. I want to say it's a single A game, in AAA clothing.
Yep. Yeah.
And it's been running like butter. I've had no hiccups or anything with that. So it's definitely, and it's also Unreal Engine 5 for both of them. So there, it's definitely the game and not my computer at this point. Which is a shame because I was enjoying Romeo as a Dead Man. But yeah, Hell Is Us, just the adventure of me getting this game, and adventure's a strong word, but there's a small story to me actually getting this game, because I remember it came out when I was traveling Europe. Again, I'm finding myself in a lot of planes in recent years. Last year, so it's sorry, you're not a Switch game, I'm playing you, is pretty much... Whereas I think I bought $50 in Switch credit and just bought what I could on sale. And that was my... And when I got back, all my time went to Death Stranding 2. But I did download the demo for Hell Is Us. At the time, I was going, I quite like the vibe of this. But even on a PS5 Pro, the performance mode had a very weird issue with the draw distance, particularly on trees where they would look like they're from a Dreamcast game until you got really close up.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's just the detail sliders I don't think were very well adjusted. I was like, you know what? I'm going to get a new PC in a few months. I'm going to make this the thing. This is going to be one of the things. Yep. Just a Steam wish list. I'm going to monitor for this for sales for when it comes to sale when I have time. First time it did it was I was traveling again. So, it was I'm not going to have time to play that. Never mind. And then a couple of weeks ago, 2-3 weeks ago, I got an email saying it's 40% off. I'm like, whoa, okay, here we go. This is, and I may have some time available. This is maybe it. And I go there and I think this game retails for 6,000 yen. Sorry, I'm going with Japan prices here.
Yep.
I was 40% off that. Yeah, I can do that. And then I go to this page and it's was 9,000 yen, now 5,500 yen. I'm you guys literally just marked up to mark down. Without any kind of lead time. Because I've been monitoring this. This just happened at best a couple of days earlier they put the price up. And that sale ends. And then a couple of days later it goes on sale again. But this time back down from the original price. I'm down to 3,000 something, and I'm like, you know what, I'm going to search around a bit. So then I found it on Fanatical for 2,600 or something. I was like, you know what, yep, all right, cool, done, sold. Shop around, people. You can buy yourself a cup of coffee with your leftover money. Anyway, yes, Hell Is... Sorry, excuse me, that sound there is me being physically unable to burp and instead making this weird gurgling sound from the depths of my chest.
Whoa.
Yeah. If you hear me belch properly, it means I'm going to throw up.
That's fair.
Hell Is Us. I mean, it's pitched as a no waypoints kind of a thing. It's this is the anti-Ubisoft quasi-open world. It's this kind of war-torn, feels kind of Eastern European place in the early mid-90s. I want to say the setting is maybe 93, I want to say, with light certainty. I could be wrong there, but it feels like that's what they're going for. And it's kind of world of two factions are being put against each other. It's kind of inter-European racism of sorts. happening. And you've sneaked into some place, and the whole conceit is you're being interviewed about how did you get into there, which is how they do their Prince of Persia Sands of Time thing. So whenever you die, like, the guy goes, no, that's not what happened. Stop telling a lie. We've got to drip in some more truth serum to you.
Actually, to be honest, I love that in Sands of Time. So
it's not as charming here. But also Sands of Time basically invented it. Like, it was super cool the first time that happened, and the time rewinding mechanic also made it make a lot of sense.
Yep.
But no, this is, it's open area, open hub more than open world. Like, they're like fairly restrained maps. And the first one you get to, like, actually lay a pretty good foundation for how this is going to work, or a good impression for, like, you kind of, I mean, the story is pretty sudden, but you meet like one guy and it's like, okay, here's a key. Oh, you want to get there? My son went, or something went that way. There are some bells hanging from the trees. If you just follow the sound of that, then you'll get there. And they, like, do some stuff like that for you to get around. The deeper, once you get through that whole area, though, the deeper you get in, the big problem I find is, like, it commits to this to the point where you have less to help you than the person in the game would actually have on his own person.
Oh. Yeah.
Like, because his note keeping is not great. Like, I spent a while not realizing I needed, because what happens is you, at the end of the first area, you kind of steal this truck, like military, and then you kind of use that to just, on a world map, choose between hubs. It's like the open areas. And I didn't actually realize, I only recently, I actually had to look it up because I forgot. I was like playing it, and it was like, all right, oh, call whatever I need to go. And I'd been told something, which would probably let me know where I needed to go. And then by the time I booted the game up again, I'd completely forgotten. I just could not find an easy notebook. They didn't need it to go. So one, note keeping is garbage. The second one is, like, I'm playing this off the back of the Silent Hill 2 remake. Fucking excellent game. Like, I'm still thinking about that, by the way. Like,
yeah.
Silent Hill 2 remake, they fucking knocked that out of the park. Says as a person who's not really a fan of the original Silent Hill, and it probably only played for 10 minutes. But, like, Silent Hill 2 does the kind of map system that this game really should have, which is you find a map, it's a paper map, and the character just makes markings on it.
Yeah, Resident Evil did something similar, which is...
Like, you actually see him, like, pull out a pen and shit like that. And there's no reason why Hell Is Us would not benefit from something like that.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I've been here, I've been told here, like, don't give me a fucking GPS system like is in every other modern game, but, like, it makes a certain amount of sense that the character would be able to, like, take notes and, like, scribble things. I guess you could do that yourself, but it's like, dude, you don't know where I'm sitting? Mm. I don't necessarily have a notebook with me.
Yeah, mapping systems, especially in, like, I would say both horror and Souls games, bad maps will completely ruin everything. Like, if they give you a map at all, it has to be decent. Like, games like Dark Souls don't have one, and that's kind of the charm of the game, is kind of the exploration. But when you get a half-assed map, it becomes very problematic.
Yeah. I mean, there's no map here, and, like, the general commitment to that, the thing is, like, people playing video games are always completely locked in, or, like, you'd be told something and then forget it. It's like, because I like the design principle where, like, it is not going to bling a little thing immediately for you to follow. Like, that is great. Like, the idea that you have, like, it's like, again, the idea is like, oh, it's over by that craggly thing. If you look over here and then look left. And so a lot of the time, like, if you're in the game, it's actually really good. It's just the capacity for me to forget stuff, I guess, but.
Yep.
Yeah, the aesthetic is also, like, really nice. It has a bit of an Eastern Bloc flavor. Weirdly, and I don't know if this is because I was playing it at the same time as Death Stranding 2, with a little bit of that as well, almost. Like, I don't really know how to describe that properly, but then these weird kind of, like, white, ghostly, like, enemies, which I think are only a very limited number, and combat that I'm actually really enjoying, which is, like, I don't know, Souls Combat Light?
Yep.
I think you can probably set it so save points will actually respawn enemies. It's not in my case, which I think is for the best, because I don't feel like playing a Souls-like.
Sure. I mean, that's totally fine.
Yeah, they do this one particularly cool thing where they can be quite hard, where it's like, when you're attacking an enemy, like, a ring of light kind of appears around you, and if you actually, as long as you don't get hit in the process, if you, like, actually click at the right time when that thing is formed, you will regain health.
Oh, yeah, that's kind of, there's a couple of Soulsian games that do that sort of thing.
Like, it's a risk-reward thing I really like. I want to say Vanquish had something like that as well. Like, I do like the incentivizing to attack to stay alive. Like, I think that's, a really fun way to keep you on your toes.
Yeah, totally. Rise of Ronin and Neo also have something a little bit similar.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. Once you, like, get into the zone, it's, like, a very clever way. bit too granular with some of the power-ups and things that you have. Like, you're supposed, like, any game where you're expected to use items, like, in the heat of battle on the fly cannot have too many granular things. Like, it's just like, okay, there are 10 different debuffs and I have a different item to deal with each of them. I cannot do this while I am also trying to block and back away. And like, I cannot cycle through that. But no, the combat I think actually plays really well. I'm a bit torn about the puzzles because I think they lean a bit hard into find the correct plate and then put them in the correct spots or do the things in the correct order, which I get why they're doing it, but it's so close to being exactly my game. Like, so close. If this was more like adventure game puzzles and like less like environmental, almost mosaic tile type stuff, some people involve them as like tile, but it's like that kind of mentality. But man, like the vibe is like really like the vibe. I like that your character has curly hair. I don't think it looks cool, but like it's just not a thing that happens in video games. So like plus one for that.
Yeah.
I think the developers are maybe a little bit too whiny about it, but I do understand like they hit the splash zone of Silk Song's like, you know, kind of Shadow Drop. Almost Shadow Drop.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of companies got burned by that. But.
Yeah, and like I can see, I mean, they're different games, but I can also see a person who may have been interested in Hell Is Us buying Silksong instead and like having a similar enough itch scratched.
Yeah, ironically, I have Hell Is Us on my wish list, but not Silksong. I'll get to Silksong at some stage, but Hell Is Us.
If you're playing on PC, go to Fanatical right now, dude, because that thing's pretty cheap.
I think it's already 50% off on Steam at the moment.
It's cheaper than Fanatical. Like, I looked at the price on Steam and I was like, I'm pissed off because you did the markup thing, so I'm going to look around elsewhere.
Sure, yeah. I haven't bought anything off Fanatical. I definitely need to do that a bit more. Because I just review so much, there's very few games I play outside of reviewing.
Yeah, I guess the plus side is you may be working, but all your games are free.
Free is a term. There is a service provided.
I get it. But yeah. I mean, if you did have your way, everything would be horror, which is why I guess when we come back, and I desperately need a glass of water because my voice is getting very dry.
That's all right.
I'm just talking about, you know, what we think the appeal of horror games specifically is. And I feel like I've kind of blown my lead into this at like the beginning of the episode where I kind of already introduced what's going on. But I mean, yeah, the long and short of it is that like, yeah, horror games use it to get Jason on the show, used Promise of Resident Evil specifically to get Jen on the show. But I do think there is like a legitimate appeal to this. It goes beyond what the appeal would be in stories or movies or podcasts, apparently. Ooh. As an aspect of game design, I just kind of like want to delve into like what it is about this genre that has made it, because it's really having a golden era right now. Like horror and Metroidvanias are like, you're eating well if you're a horror game fan.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. Like I wanted to have a look at some data because I'm a data buff. And I was thinking about like the claim that it is a golden era, and like I definitely think it's a golden era for horror cinema. Where there's just a ton of horror movies coming out. They're generally quite good quality. There's new horror movies coming out instead of like just sequels, which is huge. And there's also a rise of like horror game movies that are coming out. Like recently we've had Iron Lung based on the game and Mortuary Assistant also, but which?
Exit 8.
Oh, yeah. What a great game as well. Yeah, so we're seeing a bunch of horror game, horror movies that are coming out. In terms of horror games, like, I was having a look at Steam and like, oh, how many games released in like 2025 and how many of them were horror and how many of them were actually horror, because one of the like top 20 on my list that came up was Hello Kitty Island Adventure, which is very funny, but also very wrong. Yeah, and like, we're definitely seeing a lot of horror games, and I think there's a lot more experimental horror games coming out, but I don't think there's that many hugely big quality get horror games. Like, we're definitely seeing that in the AAA space. There's like a ton of really, really cool remakes, new games coming out in this in series, stuff like that, that are actually really, really high quality. It feels like in the last like couple of years, companies have actually worked out what made their games good and then started making those again. Like Silent Hill is really good.
Phrase it that a lot of other AAA development is like starved at the moment, but horror seems to like that you guys actually have options. Whereas a couple of weeks ago, my wife and I, maybe more than a couple of weeks ago, because we started replaying Kena Bridge of Spirits.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Like, actually, pretty good game. Like, pretty charming. We like the look of it. And the whole time, there's a very cute follow-up to this that happened a couple of days later. And she's like, I want to play something else like this. What is it? And I remember when the first time I played that game, I was like, this just feels like it is following formulas of games that have come before. But then I stopped and thought, it's like, how many games like Kena have come out recently? I was like, I'm coming up blank pretty much. And then, like, literally 2 days later, they announced the sequel, which is kind of like a cute little timing.
Oh, I didn't know they were actually releasing a sequel to that. That's so cool. Yeah,
the last day to play opened with a new Kena game that looks very nice.
Yep.
But, like, so, like, and Kena's, like, that's kind of like a, I don't know, Beyond Good and Evil-y kind of like a traditional Zelda format, like, character action, third-person game thing that, like, feels like it used to be common. And I was, like, struggling to think of something else, like, that she would want to play like it. Like, but if she said, I really enjoyed Resident Evil 8, what do I play next? And I'd be like, well, you got this, and you got this, and you got this, and you got this.
Yeah, like, I was, when I was looking at Steam, like, oh, I think almost, like, 10% of all games, like, released last year were horror. And I think
that is incredibly high.
That it is incredibly high. And I think it's kind of the same thing that's happening in horror cinema is like horror games are on the whole pretty cheap to make. Like same with horror movies. They're pretty cheap. Like you have a few, like because a lot of them are shorter form and like I'm excluding AAA games here specifically, but because a lot of horror games are shorter form, they don't take as much dev time. They don't take as much, you know, resources and they kind of, these flash-in-a-pan games that come around. The only ones that truly break through that are multiplayer horror, which is also, like, if you want multiplayer horror, there are so many games. Like, Repo, like, one of the biggest ones, peak horror adjacent. Escape the Backrooms. Dead by Daylight, great, yep. Like, there's a ton of, like, multiplayer horror. All the other ones that float to the surface outside of like actual horror communities tend to be what I would call, it's a rough term, but I would call streamer bait, like games that are very enjoyable to watch, not so much to play.
It's a legitimate term, like I cover something that you know immediately what it's referring to.
Like you see oh god, what are some of the series I'm thinking of? Five Nights at Freddy's, Garden of Banban, Poppy's Playtime, those sort of games that are like super mascot horror, like that have a character that is like, or an antagonist that's like super memorizable, super memeable, and that those games kind of float to the surface. But yeah, like there is a lot of horror out there, but there's not that much quality. Like I probably play, on a yearly basis, I reckon I probably play about 40, 50 horror games a year.
That's more games than I probably play a year, period. So.
Yeah, same.
Listen, horror games are very small most of the time.
Well, I mean,
like
I
when it comes to Halloween, I usually put on the stream for my friends and we play like 12 hours of horror
I guess
games.
If you're going like deep down the Steam enthusiast rabbit hole, that's a whole other thing. But I think you've hidden something with that cheaper to make, and I think that maybe even to a degree extends into like the bigger budget space. Because it's not like you think of horror and you think it has to be an open world game, which is a problem I think like every other sub category has, and that just blows things out of proportion. Whereas Silent Hill 2, like Tynedale's a town, not actually that big.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Very, and, like, very clever.
A lot of the set pieces are like super small as well. Like, yeah, you know, it's a lot of tight corridors. Usually, it's a lot of, you know, low resources, and so they can get away with it. Like, even like the other type of thing that's been floating to the surface is like regurgitation of themes. Like, you'll see a lot of Backrooms games at the moment, because Backrooms is just super duper popular. You know, it used to be, what was it before this, like kind of forests, like off the back of like Slenderman games, things like that, and now it's all Backrooms, and I have no idea what the next one will be, but like, you know, we do these like small regurgitated themes.
I think one of the beauty of horror games and horror movies is that you don't need a lot of money to make something scary. Like, yeah, you look at like a movie like Paranormal Activity was one of the scariest movies I can remember seeing, and it had a teeny tiny little budget.
Yep.
And I mean, you look at like these
the
games.
Blair Witch Project was like the original,
yeah,
shoestring budget cinema period, pretty much.
Yeah, and
people are very torn on if it was actually scary or not. But
oh, see, I think it was. I wouldn't call it scary, but it was definitely creepy.
Yeah, it was crazy.
But then you look at, you know, some of these games like Backrooms. There was, you know, some game I saw someone playing on stream the other day, and it was literally like there's a dinosaur that's following you around, and the level is all blocks, like it's squares, and then they've ripped this dinosaur asset off somewhere, and that can't have taken a lot of money to make. But it was still creepy, because a lot of horror is the audio and the sort of vibes and stuff, and you don't need a ton of money to make something really scary.
Yep,
and
absolutely.
You've gotten a lot of technology that's become a lot more accessible as well now. Because a big part of this, I think, actually is audio, and nobody's using just a crappy TV mono speaker anymore. Even like the most budget pair of Bluetooth headphones can, through PlayStation or through like the Windows Sonic drivers, like simulate surround sound pretty well. And boy, like, even if you're not consciously aware of it, like, that really opens up a lot of like just ways to like make people uncomfortable. Silent Hill 2, I'm going to keep talking about this because I did play it recently and I was legitimately impressed with it. Oh god, this game is fucking great. Does some, like, the surround sound, I mean, I actually have a full Sonos system now, and like that, they do a very good job of like, most of those sounds actually come from something, but you're not always like completely sure. They do a very good job with keeping like your flashlight being quite weak, like it's very high detail, but you can only see so much at one time.
I hate it.
I love horror flashlights. Holy shit, I love horror flashlights so much.
But just absolute A-plus usage of that speaker in the PlayStation 5 controller as well, where, like, you played the original, you know that you get this radio static kind of crackly thing when, like, those creepy things are around. That comes through the speaker now. Perfect audio fidelity for it.
That's actually super cool. I actually have, whenever I play PS5 games, I always turn my speaker off because I'm a garbage person.
The speaker from the controller, if a game utilizes it well, it's really good.
I think it's mostly been used really well. If you try and use it for like regular dialogue or something, but it's like the standard example is like if you're playing a shooter and somebody's coming through you over radio comms, it's an excellent usage of it.
Yeah.
And that static, brilliant usage of it. And like the sound design is such that like sometimes you'll be walking over gravel that makes just a different enough but similar enough sound to that static that it makes you like super uneasy.
I love Silent Hill so much.
I know, like, it's so good.
I'm baffled. And this is what I was saying before. Like, companies have actually managed to work out why they're, like, what makes their franchises good. Like, we came off the back of Resident Evil 6, which was a massive stinker. And then 7, 8, and 9 have been, like, incredible. And it's what a strange world we live in now. And, like, Silent Hill 2 Remake came out and it was done really well. And then Silent Hill F came out and that was amazingly good. And I'm like, this is a strange timeline.
Yeah, I think, again, like, the limited scale of, like, the things, because they're, like, the gameplay mechanics, and I do want to get into, like, what appeals, I guess, to me as well, is, like, they're not Metroidvania, but the way forward, like, the way you explore feels a little bit like it. It's not like you're going to get a magic grappling hook and then suddenly you can get up to the next level, but, like, the way that you're, like, kind of back and forward and back and forward, like, I really appreciate the way that most of these games are paced.
Yeah,
and progression, like, and also like, I just get tired of straight up action games, but like, they can have quite a, like, holy shit, dude, the action in Silent Hill 2, I'm going to be talking about this a lot, I've said it, really, really good. and this is probably a technology thing again, where like you just, there's a viscerality like when you're desperately killing those fucking monsters that is really conveyed very well. But like, you know, it's not just running and popping things down, like having combat that matters, I think. It doesn't matter, like, so at some point, horror is almost a set dressing to it, and I just wish more games were like that in general. But it has to be like that in horror games. They don't really have a choice. It's either no combat or, like, encounters fucking matter, because you always should feel like you're fighting for your life.
Yeah. I think, oh, I want to talk about one part of that before I get to the other, because I'll talk people's ear off about horror. I think horror requires a lot more caution with design over other games, because like horror is a feeling, you're trying to convey a feeling, and when it's done badly, which it often is, it completely loses all meaning and it just becomes tedious because it's, you know, you're struggling with something and it's just boring because you don't have that heightened sense of tension.
Oh yeah, if you're just pissed off because something killed you as opposed to like frightened from it, like it is a tightrope. Yeah.
Yeah, like, people have to be amazingly smart when it comes to these things, because, like you were saying, like, a lot of the level design, like, loops back on itself, and, like, you always kind of know where you have to go, at least roughly, whether it's, like, the one light in the distance or whatever, like, because as soon as you lose your way and there's not something keeping that tension up, it all falls apart. Yeah, it's... Silent Hill does this amazingly well and has always done it amazingly well, where it, like, you know, they have a map that kind of is marked off. We were talking about this previously as well, but, you know, they've got a map that's marked off, you know, oh, I can't go through that door. I kind of know where I have to go this way. And it all kind of, it manages to keep that tension up, which is very, very nice. There are a lot of games that do not manage to do that, and you end up, like, lost and just kind of bored sometimes.
Also, I think it allows them to, like, because I do have to, tension cannot be ratcheted up to 10 at all times. And like the creator's kind of familiarity with environments where they can have a greater degree of control of like, okay, the player, we know this needs to be able to just like walk and soak in the atmosphere for the next 10 minutes before shit gets really fucked up again.
Yeah. And that's kind of the, like, one of the major appeals of horror is like, yes, it's like Dead Space is great for this, where it's like, oh yeah, there's enemies on screen most of the time and they're scary, but a lot of the times, and I think where Silent Hill does this really well, is those massive peaks and troughs where like you'll have those moments where you'll see enemies, you'll either beat them down or you'll run off, and then you'll have spots where like not much is happening but the tension is kept up because not much is happening, and you're waiting for that next drop of like, okay, well, there's a lull in action right now. You can hear them right in
the
now. Distance,
because like the directional audio has gotten so good.
Yeah, and it's super scary. I'd honestly say they're one of the more scary parts is when there's nothing happening on the screen, which is
I found that
crazy.
In Silent Hill F a lot. Like, you know, once you've encountered a couple of enemies, you learn how they move and when to attack them and all of that. And then sort of once you've done the first couple, you're like, all right, these aren't so scary anymore.
Yep.
But it's when you can't see them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I was the most scared, because I know they're there. And if they would just step out, I can hit them with my crowbar and be fine. But it's because I can't see them that I'm so scared.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it's reverse Batman, or Batman is kind of reverse this, I guess. But yeah, when they start crawling up the walls in Silent Hill 2 and you're
fuck
in, like,
that.
The prison and the, like, insane asylum and the wall, and, like, your flashlight is not strong enough to reach the roof.
Oh, I love it.
Anything crawling is so much scarier than something, like, simply walking towards you.
Yep. Looking at you, Licker Beta from Resident Evil. Awful. Just awful creatures. Yeah, for
actually,
me,
we haven't spoken about Resident Evil very much at all. Actually, I thought this was all going to be Jen just gushing over Leon.
Real horror. See, when I said about peaks and troughs, Jen is laying in wait, and we're all very scared for when that dam breaks. Jen, tell us about Resident Evil 9.
What exactly? What part of Leon Kennedy do you want me to talk about first? Because that's the only thing that I'm going to talk about.
Okay, let's talk about his apparent. I want to say mid-age crisis. Like, he's walking up in a Porsche. He's like wearing the fancy like Hamilton. I guess Hamilton's not that premium compared to like your Rolexes of the world, but like, it's like fucking rolling up in a Porsche. And I think he's had some custom work done to it as well.
Mm.
And
well, of course he has.
He could have bought one. Like, I guess considering the shit that he has been through and the fact that he's kept his sanity, he should be paid pretty fucking well.
Look, Leon's not driving around in, like, a Corolla, okay? Like, he's...
Oh, I'd imagine if he was, though. Just rocks up in a...
He rocks up in a ute.
She does a sick doughy before hopping out.
Oh, God, he's got the hi-vis in the back.
Just hops out with a wife beater on and just like a VB in his hand. Fucking awful.
You know, Leon Kennedy in a wife beater. I can get
him. I can see it, honestly. Yeah.
God, it's just a singlet. Why do we have to start calling them that? Like, it's really...
It's a blue singlet specifically. I don't know. How dare you? I don't know. Australian culture is extremely strange.
It's a fucked up name for a piece of clothing. Like, let's be honest.
It really is. It really is. I don't feel great saying it, but...
No, anyway, we probably need to get the resume problem. But first, I guess, Jen, like young Leon or like current grizzled middle-aged Leon?
Oh, grizzled, like current Leon. All day, every day, raw from the back. Jesus Christ.
The thing, grizzled Leon's not been around that much. Like, we've mostly had young Leon until quite recently.
Nah, grizzled Leon all the... Like, young Leon, I'm like, eh, whatever. He's got... You know what? He's actually got kind of a weird mouth.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to talk about how much time I've spent looking at his mouth, but he does have a kind of weird mouth.
Jen is the real liquor beta.
I'm a something beta when it comes to Leon Kennedy. I'll tell you that for free. Tim's just here like, why did I bring her on here?
I knew what I was getting myself into. Why did I?
So you told you the horror is...
The horror is how dehydrated I'm going to be at the end of this podcast. That's the horror.
Told you, hydrate or dehydrate.
But he's so good looking in this one. And I think that's because the women at Capcom fed into his design.
Yeah.
And like, it, you can tell that a woman has been involved with the creation of this man because, oh my God.
He is a thirst trap for sure. Like, actually, this is funny. I was watching a video about K-pop demon hunters the other day, and they were talking about the male demons in that and, like, how they wanted them to be hot, like, really hot. And, like, the designers had, you know, developed the characters, and they're like, yeah, no, they're cute, but, like, I need hot.
So we're just getting more and more into, like, horror being super sexy, apparently. Like, dangerous fetish territory.
There are worse fetishes.
I guess they're probably better ones.
We've seen the nurses in Silent Hill 2, okay?
This is just nope.
Are you going to sit there and tell me right now that those like bobblehead nurses are not hot?
If you this feels so objective, but like,
I do not find those nurses hot.
If you ignore the face, yeah, the rest of it is fine.
So maybe it's a silhouette, perhaps. Yeah.
It's more of a
definitely.
Concept.
They definitely feel sexualized, but I wouldn't call them sexy.
Yes. I'm here for it in games that are a lot more men are terribly hot. Luckily, it's not for me, and that is okay. Game recognizes game.
Like there are thirst traps of Leon Kennedy on TikTok opening a cupboard, like. I'm not even kidding. And it's because the way he's built the angle they've done it, you know, it's all Leon from the back and you can see his shoulder blades through his very, very wonderfully tight top.
Yep.
But I'm like, there's content around this man opening a door. And I'm like, we are as bad, if not worse than men.
Yep. Look, you haven't had that much to enjoy. Men have been,
yeah, that's true.
Look, we've had a flood. For years, and now you're getting like drip fed, and it's fine.
Yeah.
The tide is turning, and that is okay. Everyone gets to enjoy something.
I'm living for it. I mean, look, I love a thirst trap of a woman just as much, but as a hetero woman, I'm always like, give me Leon Kennedy over like Ada Wong any day of the week. Also, by the way, fuck Ada Wong. I'm just putting that out there. Fuck Ada Wong.
I'm pretty sure there are people that. Wish they could.
is she in 9? I guess that would be a spoiler to say. Yeah. I don't actually know. But I do think 9 is maybe a fascinating point of discussion here because it really does feel like Capcom just kind of really just shows they've got like two approaches to this.
They know that they have two audiences, and they've appeased both of them with this game, I think.
I would love to know like how this game came about. Like, did they? I've got this concept in my mind. Like, did they have like two like initial projects going at once, and then like these are both pretty good? What if we just put them together? Well, it definitely is not a case of like let's just like put two disparate parts together and call it a thing, which I feel like has happened in game design before.
I actually think they did decide to put. I think they designed this entire game around the two different things because, like, if you lean into it too hard one side, it's not horror anymore. Like, it's just an action game if it's just the Leon side. So you need something that's, like, juxtaposed to that to make it more interesting. Something where you have a little bit less control, something where you're, you know, not as powerful, something where the, you can really ramp up the tension. And I think that's where the other part of it came through.
Like, I mean, there is a yin yang where, like, again, you're being like absolutely terrified as I've forgotten her name.
Grace.
And then like Leon is like, okay, now just get to like loosen that tension. I mean, we were speaking before about like why a fucking heavy metal album like does more to de-stress you than like acoustic guitar, and this is it. Like, you've spent like an hour running around sketch. This is Grace. All right, now swap to Leon and just round the house, kick some zombies in the face a few times.
Like, Grace, playing as Grace is a horror game, and playing as Leon is a horror game for the zombies. Like, it's, you know, he's scary, they're not.
Yeah. Like, I think the two parts of it together are what makes a Resident Evil game. Like, I think that if you only had the Grace part, this game would not do anywhere near as well. It wouldn't be as interesting to people.
Yeah.
But, like,
I wouldn't play it.
Well, yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's another reason, obviously, for why that might be the case.
But, like, Leon Kennedy's such a staple of the series, and they wanted to bring him in, partially for the first trap, and that's fine.
Yeah. I have heard there's some pretty good arguments saying, like, you know, you could have made that Claire Redfield as well. Maybe that would have been a more interesting angle. But then you wouldn't have had sexy Leon, I guess. So.
Imagine not having sexy. They clearly wanted to have something for the ladies.
And I think we are due for...
Absolutely.
We are due for this. Don't take this away from us.
We deserve this.
We do. We have fought long and hard. Give us thick, caked up Leon Kennedy and leave us alone.
See, the thing is, I was pretty big in anime fandom in my teenage years. Mm. And maybe if I could find the right stuff, I could be again now, although I found that like the type of content that's being produced or at least is popular is not to my taste as much as it used to be.
Completely understandable. That's because the taste is, like, anime has, like, stayed consistent for, like, 20 years, and you have not. You have aged 20 years.
But you're not really getting, like, Cowboy Bebops or anything anymore.
No.
It is almost much more like the fan service, which in anime just means a bit of a verve, has become the show as opposed to, like, a side element of it.
Yeah.
But, like, during that time, that also meant a lot of, like, discussion forums and things were full of mostly JRPG talk when it came to video games. Plenty of Square pretty boys had their fans throughout the like mid late 90s. Like,
yeah, but I think I think that's the trend has definitely changed away from like the very pretty, almost effeminate male, or like, you know, wildly androgynistic with muscles to the more aged, distinguished daddy character like Leon.
That's definitely pleasing Jen a bit more. Like, I do have to wonder if that's like a mixture of like aging developers or like even just hardware capabilities. Like doing like the sexy grizzled thing may just require more. Like, I mean, the pretty boy smooth face is like, you don't need any fucking texture detail.
No, you don't. Like, but to get Leon's face as like wonderful as Leon's face is, you couldn't do that in the 90s without just
even
making
even pre-rendered
look
FMV,
old.
You wouldn't have been able to pull it
no.
off.
No.
Yeah.
Like, there's a difference between looking old and looking grizzled, and I think they've done that really, really well. Whereas, like, you know, an old guy is just an old guy.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. Yeah.
We went through maybe a bad phase where, like, we had a whole bunch of new technology and we were just turning all the features up to 11, and that was probably bad for horror. The point that we now have, like, just so much power. Like, just think of, like, a PS5 is still a ridiculously powerful machine.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
To be able to, like, hit the subtlety that is maybe required for some of these things. And again, because they're never open world games, like, the usage of space in Silent Hill 2, and this is something that I think excites me a lot because I was back university studying cinema. And I started to understand, like, how, like, why is it raining all the time during these dramatic scenes or whatever? Mm. It first came down to the idea of the, oh, fuck, was it whatever theorist it was, referring to the original Metropolis movie. the concept of the any space wherever, where this kind of terrified woman like runs and eventually everything's just black and like it just highlights all the issues on her face.
Yep.
Which so talking about anime, Neon Genesis Evangelion does this fucking fantastically, just like using space just becomes part of the expression, which it fucking should, because otherwise it's just a location.
Yep. Absolutely.
Silent Hill 2 does it so fucking well, like, because the locations change, it's like, just reflects James's psyche just going to shit. Every building you go into gets grosser and more terrifying. And there's nothing realistic about it. It doesn't fucking matter. Like, it is full and expressive. And when you have enough power to let you do that. And again, like, you don't have to make that many more assets. You're just, like, repainting everything.
When you also have a level design that doesn't have a lot of space, every single centimeter counts. And normally when it's done well, like in Silent Hill 2, every skerrick of that level has been so meticulously designed. Every item is placed for a reason. Whereas, you know, in an open world game,
making an open world game.
Yeah, like an open world game, you'll have trees and shrubs and whatever the hell. Like, you'll have random assets in random places because they need to fill space. But in a smaller level, like, everything is there for a reason, for a purpose. Nothing has been placed there just because.
God, I want more games like this. Not just in horror, like, I'm just so fucking sick of everything in the open world.
Yeah, open world's kind of... I mean, open world's just not good for horror, on the most part. You do get games that are, like, more action-focused that manage to use that open world really well. Dying Light.
Game I got the name of that was actually a lot better than I remember thinking it would be. PlayStation exclusive. Days Gone.
Oh, yeah. That game was pretty good.
That game was actually okay. Not really that scary.
No.
But just full of zombie-esque things. It came out at a time where we were all very tired of zombie things, I think.
I'm never tired of zombies. I love zombies so much.
No, I hate zombies, but I'm so obsessed by zombies because I'm so scared of them.
Zombies are the scariest because they are man's inhumanity to man. Like this.
But also, zombies scare me because people are constantly trying to reanimate dead cells in the 21st century because they're trying to cure a lot of different diseases.
Yep.
And by reanimating those dead cells, these diseases kill off. Like with MS, the whole research thing around MS is trying to reanimate the cells that like your brain kills off. So mm-hmm. Who is to say that we won't just be able to reanimate all the cells one day and make a zombie? No one says that. It's entirely possible, and that is what
you know. I'm less scared of that I am than I am of Kennedy at the moment. So like if we're talking like medical research, I will take weird possible zombie experiments over Maha.
Yeah, look, honestly, that's
way more scared about like a bird flu outbreak and no vaccines available that I am that we might accidentally make a zombie trying to cure some shit.
Well, if COVID taught us anything, it's that when the zombie apocalypse happens, we're all fucked because ain't no one going to be staying inside.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's, see, this is what I love about horror. Like, in the spirit of full disclosure, like I said, I probably play about 50 horror games a year. I watch at least 1 to 2 horror movies a week, and in terms
of God.
Podcast, I listen to probably at least an hour or two of horror podcasts every single day.
But from a perspective for you people at home or out jogging or whatever you're doing right now, that's his sleeping thing. So like,
yeah, that's what I listen to go to sleep. It's very, very soothing.
That's how he makes time for that one.
Yeah, no, I listen like in terms of going to sleep, I usually put on either someone reading out a creepypasta or alternatively, I listen to some SCP. Both very exciting. But like one of the things I love to do when it comes to horror is dissect what the actual horror is. Like, I know that sounds wild, but like every horror, if it's trying to make you feel scared about something, you've got to think about what it's trying to make you feel scared about. Like Silent Hill F is about the fear of bullying and getting bullied. Resident Evil is about fear of medical advance and also corporations. Like I love to dissect those themes because that's just what makes it super interesting to me. Like
I would say that Silent Hill maybe goes more into its themes, whereas Resident Evil is drawing from I like zombie movies and we've come across with a virus as an excuse to make our zombie movie game.
Silent Hill does its theming really well because it's always multi-layered. And, you know, Resident Evil is, you know, it's still creepy, but Silent Hill, you're like everything that's Silent Hill F in particular, playing that as a woman, I found it so incredible because there's this young girl and, you know, she's scared of losing her friends, scared of losing like autonomy over her life, scared of ending up like her sisters had to go off and marry some guy. And she doesn't want any of these things to happen to her. And then on top of all of that, now she's in this world where there are creepy things coming after her. And it's like, you know, the stuff that you're worried about and the trauma and things that you experience don't go away just because you're in this also scary place. And so the whole thing is just fucked from beginning to end.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I love that like type of small town horror. Like, what was the other one that was pretty popular back in the day? Oh, Siren, Blood Curse.
Oh, wow. That's gone way back.
Oh, PS3. I hated that game.
I love that game so much. Like, it's this like this fear of like small town, like communities, like traveling through small towns and like being ostracized and like getting stuck in a place that's completely foreign to you. Like, I love that sort of stuff. That sort of stuff's incredible. And like off the back of COVID, you had, what's that little horror game that came out? Look Outside, of like, hey, this person's stuck at home and the world outside is scary and awful.
I reviewed that about a year ago to the day, maybe.
Yeah, it's a great game. I love that game so much. Like, it's actually one of the, like,
I bet it's better really now than when I reviewed it. It had some progress issues.
Look, that's
where
that's
I did get bored design. Because it's like, I don't know where I'm going anymore.
That's modern video games is spoilers. If you don't have to play something instantly, maybe come back to it in a year. It'll be both cheaper and complete.
Oh, God, yeah, I guess Star Wars Outlaws is really good now, just randomly for anyone else. No, but something I'm kind of finding, like, almost by definition, a horror game has to be a slow burn to draw you into it, which is wild to think that I guess you'd have an immediate jump scare, but I don't think that would really work. This is wild to think that, like, just attention spans are lower now, like, just in
100%.
Like, with my own. Like, even just fucking, like, Game Pass or, like, things like PlayStation Plus. Like, when you have that many other free games in Epic, like, it is harder to hold it. It is fascinating to me that they are doing as well as they are.
It's because they're so short and, like, also because they're so cheap. Like, there are a lot of free horror games out there if you want to just experience something. Like, one of the ones that I played recently, I'm trying to think of the name of it. And I can't, it was about, it was like this little, Children of Clay. And it was about like this, it was only like an hour game. And like, that's the best part about horror is like, they come in, they hit you with a concept and then they generally piss off. Like, you don't get this like super long experience of, you know, oh, this theme is there and they've got to try and keep the tension up for so long.
I think you're maybe like deeper down the rabbit hole in a way that explains it. Like, that at that point, they're serving people who already like that thing, so it's not an issue. I'm thinking like Konami's going to put out 3 Silent Hills in 3 years.
Yeah.
Which, if they keep that up, is going to become too much. Like, that cannot be, that does not look, I guess it can, but I don't think it should be an annual franchise.
No, it definitely shouldn't be. And like, that's kind of the issue that we've had before with Silent Hills. They just pumped out a bunch to kind of see what stuck. That's how we got, unfortunately, Silent Hill Book of Memories, forever in our hearts as a terrible game on the Vita, my favorite console of all time, but tragically flawed.
That was pretty good.
It was great. But yeah, like, I don't think that these horror games should come out all the time, and that's kind of why I'm super duper into the indie horror scene, is like, you know, there's just so many different weird experiences. Like, one of my favorite horror producers, which is Chillizard, they put out a game every 3 months or 6 months, depending. And they're like $10. They're like an hour or two experiences. They're kind of weird. They're very creepy. And then they're gone and you're done and you're on to the next one. It's just this, you know, it's just such a weird experimental, genre that you just don't see in other games. Like, you don't see, like, a lot of times people playing around with Souls likes, for example. Like, you do see some companies that, like, try out something a bit strange, but
in the big budget space, that is another weirdly overserved
Yeah.
Actually, that is actually kind of an interesting trend with like, is these games that you need to commit to more that are the ones that are actually surviving the best in the, like, bigger budget space.
Yeah, like, people's time is extremely limited. There is a lot of games that come out on a monthly basis. You need something that breaks through, and that's why, like, you see these mascot games constantly float to the surface, because streamers play them, they're kind of interesting, people pick them up, and more often than not, pick them up and don't play them, because they've already watched someone else play it. But, yeah, it's just something that needs to grab people's attention quick and then fade away and, you know, not overstay its welcome at all.
We probably need to wrap this up soon, but that's just such a weird concept to me where, like, you're developing this game and your entire business model, so to speak, is the idea that somebody else will play it, people will watch it for free, and then because they liked what they saw, they will maybe not ever use the thing, but they will buy the thing. It's like buying a movie ticket after you saw the show or something like it.
Yeah. I mean, that's what kind of how Five Nights at Freddy's became popular, and I don't really like Five Nights at Freddy's very much. I don't think it's that great. But it was one of the ones that, like, came through, was super easy to be streamed. People were able to watch along at home and still get the scares without, you know, kind of committing to actually having to play it. And it just kind of took off, and so they managed to make a bunch more of them. And now look at it, there's like, what, 10, 15 Five Nights at Freddy games, and like,
oh god,
13 books, and
yeah, there's
two movies, and
ridiculous. I guess, yeah. Actually, in part, like, horror is unique among game genres. I guess technically, when you talk about games, you're saying survival horror, like, to put it in a game box, because typically game genres are descriptive of experiences and mechanics, whereas horror is much more of a movie where it's like really describing a vibe.
Yeah, like, one of my favorite trends that's happened in the last few years in horror is the mundane job turned horrific.
Yeah.
I love it so much. Holy shit, I love it so much. Like, Voices of the Void is out there in alpha at the moment, of just you, like, running a satellite station for SETI and, like, things going horribly awry. No, I'm Not Human was another big one that's come out. Dead Letter Department. Yeah, there's just, like, I can understand that sort of thing, because, like, everyone's, you know, worked a job. They know what a boring job is like, and then your mind wanders and things go awful. Things go awful. It's the best. Games are great. Play more games.
Yeah. Everybody play more games. You know what? Yeah, well, let's leave that as our closing advice, perhaps. Everybody play more games. They're pretty good. You got a Switch, you got a Steam Deck, you can take them with you. Fucking play some games. Yeah. Anyway, Jason, thank you for coming on and sharing your, I guess we'll actually say, legitimate expertise, because you're, like, way down this rabbit hole in a way that
I am deep.
You have to have something coming out in the site soon. You're, like, reviewing a game every other hour, it feels like. So
I've got let's see, in the last, so embargo's up for one, so you'll see at least two more reviews from me this week, and I'm working on two other games on top of that, but one is extremely long and I'm 80 hours into it. So
can you say what the game is, or is it even
I cannot.
This show goes live Thursday afternoon or evening. Not sure, right?
I'm not sure enough. But there are games upcoming, and I play a lot of them.
All right, cool. Do you have a Blue Sky or anything you want to share before we rock?
Any social media.
Smart man.
Yeah. I spend all of my time watching horror. I don't need the horrors of social media as well.
Well, we only do Blue Sky now. Like, I jettisoned Twitter, I think maybe even before they officially changed the name, actually. Like, just get that shit out of here.
Yeah.
On that note, Jen, do you have anything coming up in the site soon?
I have some tech reviews coming up.
Ooh, shiny. I think I know what one of these might actually.
I mean, I'm reviewing a headset.
I love
but not headset. Wearing it right now, apparently.
Yeah,
no.
Not reviewing it.
That's like, it's just a boring endorsement right there.
No, it has not arrived yet, so as soon as it arrives, I'll be reviewing that, which is good. They are very kindly sending me one that goes with the color scheme of my computer, so it was very, very
nice. Awesome.
White, I'm guessing.
Love that.
Flicking
lights is...
My computer is all white and pink and purple.
Oh, that's cute. I like that.
Right, you're literally leaning into the gamer girl setup right now.
I need to replace my headset for various reasons, but the headset I'm currently using is the Razer one with the cat ears. So,
I had a feeling,
right?
Yeah, but that will be, I will be replacing it very soon. What was the question?
Do you have anything? Yeah, so you're going to be reviewing a headset.
Yes,
do you have your. I'm guessing that's not coming out in the next few days, though, if it hasn't arrived yet.
No. But, you know, look out for it. I'm sure it'll be the most interesting headset review you read all year.
From the headset expert, Jen.
Yeah.
Do you have your socials that you want to...
No, I don't use social media.
Hell yeah, Jen.
You're both smarter than me. I actually seem to recall this from last time, actually. Well, you're on Facebook, but like, just because... Fuck Australia, like... Facebook Messenger replaced the old pages,
I use Messenger,
basically.
Yeah, but I don't use Facebook.
I also only use Messenger.
Yeah.
I have not posted anything on Facebook in a long time. And fun fact, I went to America almost a year ago now and I deleted a whole bunch of posts there because things are innocuous.
I think
racism is bad. It might be bad for me. So.
Surprised you got into America on that bold claim.
I did finally get my Romeo is Dead not review piece up recently. That's probably still at the top of the features pile. Don't have any other reviews immediately incoming, but I do, because I'm an idiot, have social media. So I'm at Pretend Beard at the Blue Skies. I'm not a complete dummy, though, because I do have a daily timer set up on that thing. So 35 minutes and that app just goes, bye! Switch. If you cannot get rid of it, I highly recommend to everybody you actually do.
Yep.
It's cool not to spend your whole days doom scrolling when you could be playing games. As Jason 100%. Said, play more games.
Play more games. Actually, I want to elaborate on the play weirder games as well.
Or play old games from 2011 and spend $3,000 to make them look better.
Well, but you have to buy them. That's kind of nice.
Yeah, in the game, you probably already.